Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, my name is Zoe Birkett, and you're listening to 11, the official theatre podcast.
Hello, and welcome to 11, the official theatre podcast that brings the biggest stars and creatives together in one place to discuss life in the arts. She's the West End leading lady known for her kick-ass vocals and comedy in smash hit musicals including Moulin Rouge, The Great British Bake Off Musical, Thrill Alive, Tommy and Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, among others. And now she's taking on the beloved role of Rachel Maron once again in the smash hit touring production of The Bodyguard, having previously starred as Rachel during the production's 2015 tour. So here, in an exclusive conversation as she prepares to take to the stage and channel her inner Whitney, we talk returning to the poptastic world of The Bodyguard and how she's blending the beautiful world of motherhood with life on the road. Plus, we talk cooking up a success with the brilliant Great British Bake Off musical at the Noel Coward Theatre, which she most recently departed, originating the role of Arabia in the original cast of Moulin Rouge the musical in London's West End, and belting for the gods in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. And of course, there may also be some pop idol chat too. It's the extraordinary voice of Zoe Birkett, here now on this, the next episode of 11, the official theatre podcast. To ensure the safety of all involved in this episode of 11, Zoe and I connected for this conversation digitally, so please forgive any brief moments while we wait for the internet to catch up. Enjoy. Please help me welcome to this, the next episode of 11. She's the theatrical leading lady with The Voice that's taking on the music icon with The Voice. So I believe this should be a match made in heaven. Hopefully feeling like a $1 million bill today. Hi, Zoe Birkett. How are you?
Hello, I'm very good, William. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this. I know I joked there at the start, but like, this does feel like the most perfect pairings. I mean, you, The Bodyguard. I mean, we can talk about specifics, the fact that you've got such a wonderful legacy with this show, and it's so exciting that you're back. But for you right now, are you just living in a wonderful world of Whitney?
Absolutely. I mean, it's been around, well, it has been 8 years since I've sung Whitney. So Whitney's always been my idol since I've grown up. I think I sung Whitney Houston songs every week on Pop Idol. So I know her whole back catalogue. I'm a huge fan. I grew up wanting to be Whitney Houston. So when the opportunity came around 8 years ago to be a part of the show then, of course, I snatched at the chance. And then I've been in the West End ever since. And I don't tour anymore. I do a lot of shows in West End now with me being a mummy. Touring's not really really my thing with me having a little girl. I like to be able to go home and do the school run and stuff. But this kind of fitted in perfectly with the 6 weeks holidays, which is madness. So I've got my daughter and my family on tour with me.
How does that work out? I mean, that feels like exciting, but also terrifying, but also crazy. I mean, is it as fun as you would expect, or is it kind of tricky to balance the two?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, for me, playing such a massive role, I have to do a lot of vocal rest. So like, you're the first person I've spoken to today. Well done. So I do a lot of vocal rest in the day. Luckily, I've got a really good support network around me. My mum is our full-time nanny. So she comes here in the week with me during the week, and she will take Aria out in the morning and do some bits. And then I go and join them in the afternoon. And then on a weekend, my husband comes as well, and they kind of do a baby swap. And my husband is here at the weekend, and she gets it. She's seen me, my daughter, in various different roles now. So she understands about the whole vocal rest thing, which is good.
When the idea came along, logistically, it worked in terms of where you're at personally. professionally and in your career, but were you like, yeah, absolutely, I want to do it? Or do you have to enter into a project like this with a little bit of caution? Because we can joke about the fact there is a legacy, but like the legacy is so huge and the ask on you as a vocalist is so huge. Mm-hmm. Like, do you have to go, oh, where am I at? Like, how quickly do you say yes?
Initially, I had to say no, actually, because I have the Witches at the Nationals starting in September. So I knew I had that since February. So I literally finished the Great British Bake Off musical end of May. And I got the call to come back full time as a bodyguard. And I said, unfortunately, I'm already booked. And that was the kind of the end of that conversation. And then they came back quite a few times and just said, we'd love to have you, even if it was for a few weeks, which is lovely. And I thought, you know what? I can either have a hot girl summer of nothing and just having fun with my child, which would be great, or I can bring her with me and so she can get an understanding of how important, important Whitney is to the family. I mean, I walked down the aisle to All the Man by Whitney Houston. So she has a very familiar understanding with how special Whitney Houston is to me anyway. And I thought, now is the kind of the only opportunity I will get to possibly revisit this role again, with it being the timing of it, with me being, booked up until the end, till next year. And she's free and she's in the 6 weeks holidays. So I spoke to my agent. I said, listen, if we can make this work, I've got 5 weeks that I can give them, my daughter would be with me and my family, and immediately bodyguard producers were like, we'd love to, and we'll accommodate to your needs, which has been lovely.
Does that sort of relationship and conversation happen a lot? Because I think that sounds incredible that they're trying to make working mums work in the industry, which is something that I know hasn't always happened, but does that conversation happen a lot? And I guess, does it feel, if not, that progress is happening where this conversation is happening perhaps more?
Absolutely. You hear so much more now about people doing job shares, producers being a lot more accommodating, like you say, to working parents, not just mothers and fathers as well, but everyone's different. And I like to be in my own home. It's been a very long time since I've toured. So for me to come away from the home, it would have to be something extremely special. And so this one felt like the right move to come back again.
Definitely. So coming back, how has it been? I guess, did it feel like it did before? Did it feel like a different version of Zoe doing it? I guess, how has it been actually practically now putting it into place now you've begun the performances?
It's been very, very different. I mean, obviously, initially the cast, I had to meet the cast. They've all been doing it since January with a different Rachel Maron. So for me, I kind of had to come in immediately and go, I've only got 2 weeks. I'm familiar with the show, but I know the vibe is different. Had to kind of, rebuild chemistry with the Frank Farmer. And they've been so welcoming and so lovely. And now that I'm kind of towards the end of my first week, I've slotted in really well. And, a lot of people, which is lovely, have gone, we wish you weren't leaving. So that's lovely.
That's so nice that there is this opportunity for them to welcome in new people, but also for you to feel like you can take ownership over it. I guess, how has Rachel changed in you as a person? Like, I presume, were you a mum back then, or is this a different version of you?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say my Rachel's completely different. I mean, the producers have been so lovely and complimentary on Monday, my opener night, and they just said, this is how we want Rachel to be. So that was a huge compliment to me. I was obviously, I wasn't a mother back then, 8 years ago. My daughter's six, but I was with my husband at the time. So he's seen a huge change in me as an actress, as a vocalist, the growth in me. But then being able to also obviously emotionally connect to the text and the script this time around as a mother has been brilliant. I've really enjoyed playing a mother, knowing the real feelings that I have with my own child.
That's such an interesting point you make there, because I was going to ask, like, I don't think it's spoiling anything. I feel like this story is very well known, that there is obviously this whole relationship around the children in the show, and obviously her and this person that's trying to, let's say, get in the way of that. But also there's this relationship of a mother so desperate to protect her child.
Absolutely.
I guess for you, like, I was talking to your predecessor and Melody was saying how it's actually almost as exhausting doing the slightly more reserved bits in the emotional bits connected to the child as it is singing the hits, really going for it. I guess, is that something that you've experienced and you experience as an actor?
Yeah, of course. I mean, obviously, people don't know the story. My sister passes within the script. And that for me is a poignant moment as an actress where you need to obviously connect emotionally with that and make sure that the audience believes you for a start, believes you as a mother. And I think naturally now, I wasn't as maternal back then, I didn't understand having a child. I was, living child free. So now with having little boys by my side every day, obviously I miss my own daughter, so I can bring my own emotion as well to the piece. And I actually can't wait for her to meet the little Fletchers, because she's going to just get on with them so well. This time around for me, it's definitely more emotional. I'm definitely more connected to the piece. I'm definitely more, in almost I mean, I'm not Whitney Houston setting out millions of concerts, but we have a very similar, you know, path in the sense of Rachel Maron, the character is, you know, very busy. She has people in her house all the time. She's living this whirlwind, which is literally my life. I mean, listen, we've all been had trolls and stalkers over, you know, over the years. And there's a lot of that I can actually bring in from my own life into Rachel as an actress.
And for you as a vocalist as well, like, do you embrace the opportunity not just to sing Whitney, but to sing Whitney in such quick concession, one after another, but also with the acting and the singing and the dancing and everything on top of it? Are you like, yeah, bring it on? Or is that sort of like climbing a mountain every day?
No, I mean, listen, the mountain is there anyway when you sign up for it. And one of the things that I've always said within this industry is that you have to, you know, remain on top of your game at all costs, whether it's continuing to do your dance lessons, your singing lessons. Fitness is huge to me. Literally, as soon as we finish this conversation, I'm heading to the gym. I've got to make sure that my stamina is always there every day. And there isn't room for error, unfortunately, within this show. There's from the moment the show goes up, you've got Queen of the Night till the end, which is, you know, I Will Always Love You into Dance Somebody. You've got, you know, a whole 2 hours of jam-packed Whitney. You've got to be at your peak of fitness, your peak of, you know, as a vocalist and an actress. There's just no room for error. So yes, it's a mountain, but I mean, listen, I've got good hiking boots.
That's a good analogy. Well done, well done. But I also, you must know that everybody that proactively says, yes, I'm going to buy a ticket and I'm going to go for a night at the theatre, you know, those people are with you, which means you can enjoy it together, right?
You say that, but because it is such a mammoth role, there's also, I think you have, naturally as a performer, you kind of go, from the moment you open your mouth, these people are, you know, expecting something, something fabulous. They're expecting to, no one sounds like Whitney. None of us sound like Whitney, but we have to have, you know, that extreme power behind our vocals, the richness, you know, the range. And if you can't deliver that, it's, you know, the audiences are going to be disappointed. So for me, it's just making sure every day that from the moment you see me, know that I'm invested, and then you know you're going to be in safe hands.
What is going through your mind when you sort of it starts and you hear those calls for Queen of the Night and it kicks in? Are you like, yay, or like, oh wow, okay, here we go?
No.
Like what happens?
I'm like, yay. I mean, I'm literally like screaming to all the dancers before, come on, let's have it. You know, I'm one of those. But I mean, there is an element. I think Queen of the Night, for me, there's two songs that are actually the hardest, I would say, within the piece. One of them is Queen of the Night. And that's because it is such, the only way I can describe it is balls to the wall song. And for an opening, there's no kind of gearing up towards that. It's like, bam, you're there and you've got to produce these really solid, powerful vocals. And then also, I would say One Moment in Time, which is straight, it comes immediately after the Nikki death. And when you're crying as an actress, that can put strain on your vocal cords, you know. So you've got to kind of learn how to cry in a believable but protective place for your voice. And then you've got to clack out One Moment in Time after crying. So I always find those two are placed really strange. Like, I would love Queen of the Night to be maybe the end of Act One, because you're kind of warming into it and then you can sing it. And then I'd love One Moment in Time to maybe the beginning of Act Two, because that's kind of where you're at your warmest, you know. But they're literally beginning Queen of the Night, okay, let's get this hard one out of the way, and then One Moment in Time, you're like, okay, let's clack this out after crying.
I was wanted to ask you about acting and I guess embracing a script, because I had the pleasure of seeing you on three separate occasions in the Bake Off musical, and it was just extraordinary. I mean, firstly, I think a lot of people go in with preconceptions of what that show is going to be, and the genius of what you guys did was that it just blew everything out of the water. It's so good. The cast album is something that I revisit almost daily. But I guess for you, like, that's such a character driven role that you played, and she was so funny, and you're funny anyway. But I guess, do you like it when there's direction and character and something to really sort of dig your teeth in? And I guess for you, do you like playing characters that are funny, that you know you've got to deliver, us it sort of doesn't work? I guess, what goes through your head?
I love them. I mean, take away the fact interviews while doing The Bodyguard are hard, because I have a really high-pitched, funny northern accent normally anyway. But in order for me to continue to do this role successfully every single night, I need to keep my larynx in a low place. So even me doing interviews with you now, naturally, if you were to chat to me when I wasn't within this show, maybe if I was in Bake Off, we'd get a completely different interview because I'd have a lot more spirit and I'd be a bit more uplifted because I'm not having to reserve as much, you know, for the evening performance. But Bake Off, for me, the comedy, as soon as I saw the script and I got sent the script to come in, Scott Page already did the role at Cheltenham. So I was going to be one of the, myself and Hayden Gwynn were like two of the new people. Everybody else had previously done the run in Cheltenham. So after I finished Moulin Rouge, I got sent the script for Bake Off for Kim. And I just thought it was hilarious. And I knew of Scott. We'd never worked together. One with us both being Northern. I was like, this could be brilliant. And I thought, I love his personality. I'd seen his videos online. Really loved him as a, you know, as an actor and a comedian. It was important for me to take roles this year where people saw me in a different light. Everybody kind of knows I can sing the phone book, but I think the fact that I kind of went into Bake Off and a lot of my fans were like, oh, you don't really sing that much in Bake Off. I was like, well, yeah, that's the point. I have to get other things to my CV to show other people different sides of me, because singing, I've done singing for 20 years and I've also been, you know, an actress now, for goodness me, in the West End for almost 15 years. But I need people to see me on a different side. And I love comedy pieces. I love comedy scripts. I've said to my agent, listen, whatever comes to the door for comedy, put me in. I want to be a part of that. And then when Witches came up, I read the script for that. And again, brilliant script, hilarious. I'm a huge fan of the films. So yeah, this year was mainly acting driven, to be honest, rather than looking at material that was going to be help with my singing, because that we all know that I have. So it was about the other side of me this year.
Are you the sort of person that embraces challenges and things like that, or perhaps tries to overcome what other people's, you know, very fair perceptions are for whatever reason, and you're there to smash through that?
Absolutely. I mean, even coming back to The Bodyguard, and I've had various, especially this week because we're in Crawley, which is near London, various different producers and directors come and watch me this week. And they're like, goodness me, you're just growing and growing even more as an actress. And that's important to me. To be able to equal both of the sides out, you know, is really important, because I think I've done so many shows, you know, like your Priscilla Queen of the Desert, Moulin Rouges, you know, where people know if there's something, if there's a big production with a big old ballsy soundtrack, Zoe Burkett's going to be in it, you know. But I think it's good for me to do some other things as well, just to keep that other side of me, you know, going as well.
But things like the two references there, but like Moulin Rouge and Priscilla, it's always your version. It never feels like you're trying to copy or emulate somebody else. And I feel like that's one of your great strengths, is that you have the ability to be confident enough in your voice to do it your way. Do you think that's perhaps why you've had such success?
Possibly. I think you can't go around just trying to be anybody else. There's only one of you. You know, the amount of people think, you know, or may look at, you know, myself online and things that I put out and they think, goodness, she's going at something else again. But what you don't see is the rejection that I get as well, you know, weekly for other roles that I might really want as well. So one of the things is just to try and stay authentic, and you know, the right thing will be right for you at the end of the day.
Definitely. And I think that's hard to, you know, especially with rejection, that's hard to think about and maintain. But I think that outlook will get good results, right?
Yeah, of course. And I think, listen, something happened to me when I became a mother as well. You know, this wonderful career that I've had that I love and that I'm continuing to strive and, you know, grow with as I get, even as I get older, I'm 38, but still there's so much more that I want to achieve. But one thing that did happen to me when I became a mother is, you know what, if I don't get a job, it's okay, because it means I get to spend some more time at home with my family. And you've got to remember there's other important things in your life other than getting that no. And I see so many young people, especially off the back of the pandemic, being heartbroken over not getting jobs or getting agents. And you've got to go, you've really got to write things down that are going great in your life and just keep heading back to that piece of paper and going, I may not have got that job, but look at all these positive things that I've got to date within my life, just to keep remembering.
How was it for you when the opportunity to go into Priscilla came along, a show that I think probably took every ounce of your energy out of you? Because my God, was that a role and a half.
Priscilla was just great fun. I was one of three divas, original cast. As far as set and production and like no expense spared, Priscilla was definitely up there with, I mean, the bus itself was something like £5 million. And just being one of the divas and coming down, you know, from the ceiling, hanging there, singing all these 70s disco classics was just right up my street. And it was like, when I heard it was coming over and I did my research, I was like, well, I have to be in this. And that I felt the same with Moulin Rouge. I can't lie. When Moulin Rouge opened on Broadway and I managed to watch some clips and stuff from their performances, I was like, well, I have to be in this, don't I? You know, it's you see certain things that you hear coming over and you're like, this has got my name written all over it. But then, you know, as an actress as well, you kind of go, I don't want to be also just put in a box. So then I have to just also turn things down that people expect me to do. I mean, you know, there's been things that I've been asked to do this year that are coming to West End next year. Then I've got, yeah, I can see why you'd want me in it. But it's too easy for me to do. I need to continue to keep challenging myself and growing. And so thank you. But this path that I'm on now is about more growth.
Does it always live up when you have something like Moulin Rouge, when you've watched it online, or like Priscilla, you research the role, you see other people doing it? When you're in that moment of just about to descend from the ceiling or just about to open the show and the curtain starts to fold upwards, do those moments always live up to how you think, or are they always so different but in a good way?
Oh my God, they live up. It's very rare I kind of go, oh my God, this is happening. But Moulin Rouge, I think after just doing nothing for 2 years with the pandemic, and I mean, I didn't even do that much stuff online due to choice, to be honest. My life since 16, since doing Pop Idol, has been like job after job and work. And I have, touch wood, been extremely blessed that I've continued to work for so long. But having that opportunity, which was taken out of my hands, to not work, I kind of took hold of that and ran with it. So I didn't do anything in the pandemic, really. I chose to, you know, be a full-time mummy, support my husband, because his job was like going through the roof. He's a mortgage broker and lots of stuff were happening to him in a good way. So then I took the reins, you know, my end, because he definitely takes all of the reins when I'm at work. And I had 2 years of just having this great, amazing bonding time with my daughter and being able to just be around the home and do homely things, which I never get to do. At the end of the pandemic, I actually had to have a hip replacement because I had serious problems with my hip. And I was like, oh my God, am I ever going to be able to perform again? Like, the jobs that I do were very like, you know, Beyonce, like, I'm coming for you. I'm going to eat it up. I'm going to dance and sing. Watch what I can do. And I thought, am I going to be a singer who's just going to have to stand there and just sing ballads? Like, that's not who I am. And so I did so much physio and fitness. And when Moulin Rouge came around and I entered the audition, naturally I was like, am I going to even be able to do the audition? Am I going to be able to handle 12 months because of my hip? But actually getting my hip replaced, I should have done when I was like 20, because now I've got a body of like a 20-year-old. It's like, it's the best thing I ever did. And when that curtain came up the first night, I had all my family in and my husband. And literally, I could have cried. I mean, the opening is 12 minutes long and it's an absolute mammoth of a beast of an opening, but by the end I was just in tears. Like, I did that. Like, not only have I done it and I've got myself this great job off the back of a pandemic, I've had a hip replacement, like, I'm 37, like, oh my goodness, this is brilliant. And yeah, I just, you never stop. If you want stuff, just never stop going for it and never stop dreaming and never stop trying your best, because like, even things like the pandemic, I was like, maybe I won't work now. Maybe I'll slow down a little bit. I'm getting a bit older. But actually, if anything, I've just got more fire in my belly than ever before.
And also, you have to sing the first line of a show, a brand new musical. No pressure, babe.
Oh, my God. Do you know what? Every night was fine. But the moment where I was like, oh, my God, was actually the Olivier Awards.
Yes.
Because it was with like a massive, huge orchestra, Royal Albert Hall. Every single producer, director you could think of, it was going to be televised. I was like, listen, I'm opening the show. Like, we opened the Olivier's. I was like, my voice is the first thing that everyone is going to hear. If I screw this up or if I'm out of tune. So that was a moment where actually, as soon as I heard the boom, doom, 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 I was like, right, Birkit, get a hold of this bitch. We're going.
I'd love to just be able to see all the cogs in your brain going,
literally,
fuck this.
Yeah, literally, literally.
I wanted to tell you actually that you were the very first concert that I went to see. You're never going to remember this, but it was in Nottingham and it was the Gareth, Will and Zoe show. And I got told to sit down by an usher for standing up and dancing. So we have history.
No,
and I tell this
that.
Story all the time. That I went to my first concert and they said, stop being gay, sit down, basically, was what I got told. And I never did, and I had the best time. So thank you for that.
You are very welcome. Thank you for coming. I love that. And here we are.
That was like full circle, right? It was going to happen. Exactly. It might have taken 15, 20 years, but we got there. That's the most important thing. We've spoken about just a few of the amazing projects that you've been part of, the ways in which you've pushed yourself, like in very deeply, very personally, but also tried to expand what might be possible and what you think is attainable and to be able to smash all of those. When you think back to your very first job in the West End, when you think about your very first theatrical job and all these markers, all these chapters that you've done, what would the Zoe back then think of the Zoe now?
Oh, goodness me. Probably wouldn't believe that I'm still here. I mean, I've always been very driven, but I think especially things like the pandemic, nobody knew that was coming. And I know so many people who are super, super talented who just had to close the door on it because they couldn't take it mentally anymore. They couldn't, you know, they couldn't face it. They couldn't, and I'll be honest, theatre's changed off the back of pandemic, you know. The producers want different things now, you know, and the doors are opening for different people, and lots of it is wonderful. Lots of it is wonderful, but lots of it is hard on other performers as well, like getting the doors closed on them. And I think for me, I'd be proud of myself that I've stuck it out, to be honest. I've had so many no's, even when a lot of people think I get a lot of yeses, I get a lot of no's. And those no's just make me go, let me get the feedback that I want from them. You know, if I've got to work on something, then believe me, I will. Like, I will, if you want me to work on something, I'll work harder than anybody in the room. But I think I'd be very proud of myself for continuing to stick it out, especially now that I'm a mother, a working mother. You know, a lot of mums within the industry itself, it's hard. You know, we suffer a lot of guilt being away from the home, not being there for, you know, sports days or, you know, nativity concerts because we have bloody two matinees or something, you know. So there's a lot of sacrifice. But I'm still here, and I'm happy that I'm still thriving in this business we call show business after, you know, 22 years.
Definitely. Another day, another Zoe Slay, I think, should be the new motto of
your life. I love that. I'll steal that. Yes.
Amazing. Zoe, this has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much. And most importantly, keep enjoying the madness of this industry. And most importantly, good luck with The Bodyguard as well. It's really lovely to talk to you. So thank you so much.
Lovely for that chat. Thanks, William. Take care.
I'll see you soon. Bye, babe.
Bye, darling.
You've been listening to 11, the official theatre podcast. Find out more about 11 at 11podcast.com or via the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.